Welcome to Ixnay, the podcast where we take a deep dive into the shallow end of the electorate as a means to gaming the 2020 election to our advantage. Turn on, tune in, vote out. Hey, all right now. Another wild week in the land of the free found Donald Trump saying of his job performance, it is what it is. And while it's probably the most honest thing he said in 4 years, as far as slogans go, I'd have to rank it somewhere between Popeye the Sailor Man's I am what I am and that's all what I am, and Little Lamar Jimerson of Elrod Elementary School's I know you are, but what am I? I'm your host, Trace Crutchfield, and on this episode of Ixnay, we'll be talking to Greg Keeley of the Council on American Security about how Donald Trump is bleeding U.S. support for his re-election. But first, Kanye West admitted to Forbes magazine that his only interest in getting on swing state ballots was to be a presidential spoiler on behalf of Donald Trump. And people are upset because it does seem uncool. But hey, we started a super PAC, so we're good, Kanye. Call me. Previously on Ixnay.
If you think that Donald Trump should be reelected for another 4 years as the president, that tells me something is very wrong with your judgment. I can disagree with somebody on an issue and support them for office, but if your judgment is so poor that you want to roll the dice on another 4 years of Donald Trump as president, I just don't see how I can support somebody that has done that. That's a litmus test for me.
That was Tim Miller of Republican Voters Against Trump talking about throwing the bathwater out with the baby. That is, voting out Trump's enablers for supporting this shit show. All politics is local. So get to know your state's Republican politicians and fire them. On the election front, presidential polling continues to look promising for Biden, and yet Trump's support? Well, it is what it is. You just can't underestimate the appeal of ineptitude, I suppose. So with less than 3 months until Election Day, it's time to go on the offensive. To move from resistance to insistence. Simply put, America deserves better. Insist upon it. And yes, I'm looking at you, swing states and suburban women. Enough with the hogwash. Let's get to it. We'd like to welcome to the show Commander Greg Keeley, retired U.S. Navy, who's now the president of Council on American Security.
Hey, Trace, thanks for having me.
Of course, it is my pleasure. What exactly is the Council on American Security, CAMSAC, and what's the mission, Commander?
Trace, I've been what I like to call a sensible or sane conservative for, my entire career, both military and when I worked in Congress. But at some point, enough just gets to be enough, and Donald Trump has become a legitimately existential threat to the United States, our security. And, I'm not the only one that thinks that. And our membership of the council, of CAMSEC, is drawn from the military, from the intelligence, and from what I guess we term the homeland security communities. And our entire mission is to restore the principles of honor, integrity, and service to our, daily lives, which are so much part of the military and so much part of folks' psyche that keep this country safe, but it's been so diminished by the president, either because he doesn't understand what honor and integrity is, or he is, in the pocket of some world leader that wants to do the United States harm. But bottom line is, CAMSEC came together, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, from all ranks, from Private Joe Blow to four-star General Russ Honore. We're a group that is bipartisan, working to get Donald Trump out of office because he's a danger to the country.
Fabulous. I guess we should talk a little bit about you, because people listening to this, maybe even more than seeing you on TV, can tell that you don't have an American accent. So how do you get into the U.S. Navy? How does that happen?
So I served in the Royal Australian Navy for about a decade, both reserve and regular. I deployed to, Iraq in 2003 with the United States, but as an Australian officer. As a result of that was under Secretary Rumsfeld. Then as a result of that, I met my, you know, now wife, and she's American, and moved back here. The only job I could get in the government with any sort of security, you know, role was in the Congress, if you can believe that. So as a foreign national, I was working for the vice chairman of the Armed Services Committee. I then went on to work for Ed Royce, who was the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and eventually over to John Barrasso, senator from Wyoming, who's now the number three Republican in the Senate. Because that was sort of the only government job I could get, and I always worked in the government. So in the course of that all happening, I was recruited, I guess, by the guy that was at the time, Admiral Cotton, the three-star admiral in charge of the reserves for the US Navy. He came to me and was like, we need to bring you across. I was like, no, sir, I was retired. Anyhow, a year later, there I was getting sworn into the US Navy.
So I realize that there's probably different tipping points for people who voted for Trump in 2016 and intend to vote against him in 2020. It's like, could you talk through some of the specific moments that have influenced you guys? Because I sometimes think that the cumulative, which is obviously important, gets lost because, as you know, the Axios interviews, things like that, so many things happen. But specific things that he's done that would affect the way the military, DHS, or, you know, intelligence people would feel about his fitness for office.
Yeah, that's a super interesting question, Trace. From my, you know, and I think there's that holus bolus impact, you know, when you go across the politicization of the military. He's using federal agents in somewhere like Portland, you know, that debacle in Lafayette Square. But then his foreign policy issues as well. I mean, he's disparaged the military. He's disparaged, you know, he's called them a bunch of babies. You know, he won't go to war with the generals, but he'll certainly use them in a campaign ad. He won't, you know, he's called the, you know, he called the his own CIA a bunch of Nazis, or as Winston Churchill would say, a bunch of Nazis. I mean, that's
just
extraordinary.
That was at the very beginning. That was like one of the first things he did.
It's like 2 days after he was sworn into office. So for me personally, the tipping point was when Trump surrendered the ground in Syria and threw our Kurdish allies under the bus, literally. You know, he got on the phone with President Erdogan of Turkey, who's a despot, an autocrat. He talked him into abandoning the Kurds, who have been our only allies in the region since the Iraq War, you know, over a decade ago. We fought side by side. I had friends of mine that were, let's say, injured, wounded, whatever you want to call it, directly because of Trump's abandoning the Kurds like that. It is just shocking to me. And, you know, when someone like Secretary Mattis or General Mattis resigned over that, at that point, I know a number of my colleagues were like, if the secretary can do it, and he's a badass, if the secretary can do it, I certainly can step up. And that's where we founded CAMSEC.
Yeah, you know, the Kurds have kind of a special place in my, I wouldn't say my heart, but in my recognition. Back in about 1987, 1988, I had spent a couple of years traveling in Turkey, and I was in Diyarbakir, kind of in eastern Turkey. Mm-hmm. And that was about the time that Saddam was gassing the Kurds, right? We had that crazy thing going on so long ago, right? They have been involved. They have been screwed over so much, it's almost incredible. Well, what had happened with me was I met this guy, and I guess he was an engineer of kind of Kurdish descent, and they were building this big caravanserai, which wasn't like a camel thing, but it was like a motor home, a motor lodge or something. Right? It was a big, beautiful wooden structure with gates. And we went there that night, and they fed us a bunch of food, and we drank. I was with my girlfriend, and we sang a bunch of songs. And when it was almost over, the guy told me, like, you can't really talk about being here. Those songs we were singing, they're completely illegal. And at the time, I thought, it was such a far-out concept to me, like in my mid-early 20s, that like singing a song could be declared illegal. So I always kind of paid attention to them. And, you know, remember there was a time, too, that we wanted them to do some things when maybe Herbert Walker Bush was president and we left them hanging. I feel so unbelievably terrible for them. So when I heard you mention this before, I was like, yeah, it's heartbreaking, man. It's just inexcusable.
Right. And, you know, I hold the Obama administration accountable during their term for not arming the Kurds as they should have. But you know, not providing them enough weapons is one thing, but totally surrendering allies to a foreign antagonistic power is something entirely different. And I don't know if it's because Trump simply doesn't understand, but that to me was just inexcusable.
Yeah, I would imagine it made, you know, people in the military jump out of their skins when he essentially gave Syria to Iran, Russia, and then that whole border region to Turkey, where he's like, yeah, do whatever you want.
It's just insane. And then, of course, not a month later, we're having to send troops back in and reestablish some sort of control in the area because too many people were getting killed, and it was affecting our national security, our posture in the region.
Again, things happen so fast because I even remember the Russians taking over some American base. There's like footage of we had to boogie at the last second because the president said, party's over, time to come home. And then the next day, the Russians roll in there like wearing our clothes. It was crazy.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we had to blow up munitions, fuel supplies, vehicles, all this sort of stuff. And now the Russians are using airfields that we built.
Yeah. I mean, so... What I always think about this partisan politics is that sometimes, you know, personal freedom and integrity shouldn't really be bound up in some kind of political orthodoxy. So my question is, because I don't even really know the answer to this, did you vote for Donald Trump in 2016? And kind of what were you hoping would happen? What did you not expect to happen?
Right. Good question. And the short answer is, you know, I found two terribly unpalatable characters, you know, at the top of the respective tickets. I couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, and I eventually sort of went down party lines and voted for Trump. You know, I mean, I voted on a conservative ticket my entire life, except when I voted against Roy Moore in Roy Moore in Alabama last election because he was a crazy person. But yeah, I voted for Trump, and so did most of the Republican conservative folks that are on the council. But you know, they might be conservative, but they're not irrational, and they can see what's happening. And that's why, and that's a big part of our mission, is to make sure that Americans, military, veterans, you know, people that keep us safe, understand, you know, you always hear, oh, Donald Trump does this for the military, Donald Trump does that for the military. Well, that's all bollocks.
Right.
He has debased the military in such a way that it's almost shocking. And his misunderstanding or his just plain dumbheadedness in dealing with international relations is extraordinary. And I think you're going to see more and more. But, you know, I talk to people in the Pentagon almost every day at pretty senior levels, and they're just hoping they can just run out the clock because the amount of damage. You think of how much intellectual property and experience has left the Pentagon in the last 2 years, even in the last 2 months. Extraordinary, a wealth of knowledge and experience has just vanished. And you can't replace that. And that is also dangerous to our national security.
It's crazy. He couldn't be appointing a dumber bunch of people. It's so crazy. It's like,
and the problem is also, you know, Trace, is that the people he's appointing now a third, fourth, fifth, sixth level down the ladder, because one, no one wants to do it, and two, anyone that had any smarts has done it, got the title, and you know now works for Raytheon or something.
Yeah, they're all acting, or it's crazy. It's like,
right.
Well, one of the latest things I think that's interesting that you might be able to help us with is like this drawdown in Germany, right? And kind of in the normal passage of history, we might think this is a positive move, you know, less army out in the world, there's more peace. What do you think about his abandonment, if not like outright denigration of NATO?
Oh, it's shocking. It's potentially catastrophic. You know, Trump has effectively betrayed the United States' most staunch allies. And that runs from NATO and then specifically Germany, Britain, France, Canada to an extent, certainly Australia. And that doesn't even count countries like Mexico or, you know, the Kurdish nation. I mean, the president is still angry that the Kurds didn't storm Omaha Beach with us in World War II. He said that publicly. that why should we protect them? They didn't. They weren't there on D-Day. I mean, he's the president of the United States. But at the same time, Trace, he then will go and backslap and, you know, live large with President Xi in China or Kim Jong-un or obviously Vladimir Putin, whatever he's got over him. I'm sure we'll find out one day, but it's got to be something. Yeah. So he's quite happy to throw half a century of alliances and mutual defense away because Angela Merkel said something he didn't like, and just walk away from it. You can't do that.
He's not getting anything, right? So maybe the Iran deal wasn't perfect. We got nothing new. You know, the climate change thing, maybe it wasn't perfect. We got nothing new. This walking away from NATO, we don't get anything in return. He talks about transactions. He is losing every single day in his transactions. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, the great negotiator.
Yeah. So on this podcast, we've talked a lot about the influence that vets can have in 2020. So I guess the question is, what could we do to help you help us?
Yeah, Trace, thanks. I think, you know, Trump talks about the silent majority a lot, right? Well, military and, you know, intelligence officials are the ultimate silent majority. They're trained and they're, you know, their job is not to talk about what they do politically. So, you know, we're hoping we can, one, educate some of our brothers and sisters in uniform, and two, bring them across. Now, they're not ever going to speak out, particularly if they're currently serving, but the exasperation with this president, they see their shipmates and their colleagues, you know, maligned, wounded, and at worst killed because of the actions of this president. I think, you know, there's 2.1 million people in uniform in the United States. I think that's the number. I could be off there, but that's a lot of folks. And let's say we can help bring across 5 or 10% of those into, Joe Biden's column. Well, that's what we're going to do. And a lot of these folks are in places like Florida, North Carolina, states that are really important to the election. And I think you'll be surprised how the military has turned against Trump writ large. I mean, you're still going to have, like society, you're still going to have that 30 or 40% that is well and truly on the Trump train. But I think folks that are a bit more considered about it, and people don't join the military on a whim. It's a pretty, you know, it's a thing you do with quite a bit of consideration. The more considered folks in uniform are going to realize how bad Trump is for the nation and how bad he is for the for our armed services.
Now's the time of the show where we talk about sponsors. Almost every podcast has a moment where they ask supporters for donations, sometimes via a subscription service like Patreon. But you know, we're not just a podcast, we're a super PAC. So, well, maybe just play it. That's a little something we like to call backmasking for dollars. Now, you'll never be able to tell, but it's a fundraising message in reverse designed to subliminally encourage whoever hears it to send money to Ixnay. Can you hear it one more time? Now, I know what you're thinking. Subconscious messages? What the hell? I saw HBO's Watchmen. But we're only using rock and roll style backmasking as a way to raise money. We're not Satanists, after all. The beauty of this scheme is that we can play the message from time to time, and you won't even be bothered to notice that we're begging, well, maybe more like persuading you to give us money. I think you'll agree that as a fundraising strategy, that's pretty cool. Less intrusive and even less demanding of your conscious yet receptive mind. So just relax and let us ixnay your troubles away while you donate early and often, even if you don't know why. Yeah, you know, we always see Trump on TV and he's always worried about what people think about him, but he rarely ever seems to push back on this idea that he doesn't read, right? And I think of the Presidential Daily Brief could be as complicated as it needs to be, or it could be as simple as some emojis, right? That they could present it to him in a way that he could eat it like cornflakes with some milk on it or something. Is it that he just doesn't care about the truth? I mean, do we have any idea why he's unconcerned?
I just don't think he cares. We had 8 Marines and 1 sailor die in a training mishap off the coast of California on the weekend. and there has still been no statement from Trump of condolence. Think about that for a second. Yet he has reached out, about a alleged child molester or, trafficker of children for sex individual because he doesn't want anything bad to happen to her. But nine service members die in a training accident on the job and not a peep from him. I mean, the Russian bounties is another issue. You know, he talks about all this other nonsense about TV show ratings and about his golf game and et cetera, et cetera. Not one.
Or how he loves the military. He talks about how he loves the military all the time. And like, this seems one of the easiest. The thing about him is he's teed up with so many easy points that he could make. Now, I might not get him a bunch more support, but it might stabilize some of the people fleeing if he was just to stand up and do a few things. Even if he was to say something to Putin, like, don't fucking do this anymore. I mean, Putin is probably going to be like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? I don't think Trump loses anything if he even stands up to him if he's in a game.
Of course. I mean, you think, and from my experience, how often a world leader will talk to the other world leader and say, look, I've got to say this for the domestic audience. I mean, we've seen everyone from, just in our lifetime, George Bush, Obama, they've all done it, right? So why can't, or why doesn't Donald Trump just do that, say, to his buddy Vlad, hey, Vlad, look, I've got to call you out a bit here. I need it for my domestic. And Vlad will be like, he thinks he's a moron anyhow. So Vlad will be like, yeah, whatever, Donald, have at it. You know, Ronald Reagan said that freedom is never more than one generation from extinction.
Yeah.
And back when President Reagan said that, there was no internet, there was no Twitter. So saying one generation was probably pretty accurate. One generation from extinction, I think, has now boiled down to a couple of years from extinction, because the way Trump is going, I don't see how the American democracy, as we know it, survives another 4 years.
Well, I mean, we can see everybody kind of not being into Trump. But say if I was to come to a CAMSAC barbecue on Labor Day, assuming there was no coronavirus, and we were talking off the record, if I was to say President Joe Biden, what do you think most people's response would be to thinking about Joe Biden as president?
Well, look, I'll cite a personal example. Like, as we said at the top, I've always voted for and worked for, Conservative Party, both in Australia and here in the US. When Obama was president and Biden was vice president, I would have gone to work for the president in a heartbeat. If you get asked by the president to go and work for them, you go and do it. Similarly, I would have gone to work for the vice president's office if that ever had come up. I am sure the military or the people that I know, certainly, if they were asked by President Biden or asked their opinion of President Biden at the barbecue, would be supportive, like 100% supportive. At the end of the day, if you're in the military, you want your president to be successful. Gotcha. Because if the president is successful, if he is respected on the world stage, then your job is much easier. So you want that president to be as successful as possible. So I think you would have no problem finding some amazing people with military and intelligence backgrounds that were at one point probably on the Trump train that would go immediately to the service of President Biden. I gotcha.
Well, one of the things I think most Americans have a pretty good idea what to do about Russia is like kind of just stop bending over backwards for them. But what would you guys think to tell Joe Biden that he needs to do about China? Like, China taking action against its own people, the South China Sea, just all these things that China is doing. And as a native Australian, obviously you've got some ideas about this. What do you think Joe Biden should do?
Yeah, I think, look, the first thing, Trace, is that a Biden administration will have to reset, like to re-level the playing field. Because right now it is so jinked in the favor of China and Russia, and to a lesser extent, someone like Erdogan, that there's no quick fix. So, these other leaders don't trust the United States, whether they're adversaries or allies. So what we're seeing, I think once Biden, let's say Biden becomes president, I think, you know, he will have to really take it to China. I mean, I think the pandemic will help insofar as a lot of people now are not seeing China differently. So I think domestically that makes Biden's job easier. But yeah, we have to stand up to China. The business in the South China Sea is case in point. Case in point. You know, we've allowed them over the last 4 years to build effectively mobile aircraft carriers and claim all this land that's, you know, not theirs. We've allowed them now to roll back into Hong Kong. Taiwan's going to be next, like no question, because they see Trump as a weak leader and they know he won't do anything. So they're trying to get all this stuff done, all this malfeasance carried out globally before President Biden, fingers crossed, is in office, because they know that Biden won't put up with this sort of nonsense on behalf of the American people.
I mean, I always think, too, that even though Joe Biden might have some, whatever his opinion really is, he might really listen to the military for what the military is there for. Right. You know, Trump uses the military, as you said, for his own kind of PR thing. But I don't think he really listens to them when they were talking about that Syrian border and all these things. He just uses them for what he wants. So,
yeah, it's nuts. I mean, we could talk about this for hours and hours. It'd be even better over a bourbon or two. But it's just quite extraordinary to me. And I just, you know, if I've got any, you know, colleagues, shipmates that are still going to vote for Trump after all this nonsense, even if it's not national security related, you know, I think we've got a big problem. But my gut tells me we're going to see a, you know, once the votes are counted, a big swing toward the, you know, Biden presidency away from Trump. And, you know, if you asked, you know, a little bit ago and I didn't answer it properly, but, you know, if folks want to help, we love to help. You know, if you're military or intelligence community or family of, or just want to help, just go to our website, which is CAMSEC, CAMSEC.org. Sign up. There's a bunch of stuff we can do. You know, if folks would like to donate some money, you know, we've got some really cool ads out now, which we're pushing. And one got me banned by the Republican chairwoman. So I'm blocked. That's my first block on Twitter. So it's very exciting. And our Twitter handle is call sign CAMSEC, if folks want to follow us there. And obviously, most of our board members and ambassadors all have Twitter handles as well. So, you know, financial support would be awesome. It's really easy. Even $5 would be helpful. But, you know, CAMSEC.org will find us. I'm on Twitter as well, Commander CDR Keels. We'd love to talk to people. Any help would be fantastic.
Cool. Fabulous. All right. Well, I'll get you out of here on an easy one. Okay.
Okay.
Who has better barbecue and beer parties, Americans or Australians?
Okay. You'd be surprised, Trace, how many times I've been asked this.
That's cool.
And it pains me to say that without reservation, I have to say Australia has much better barbecues. They're different, you know, but if you go to a barbecue in Australia, it's people in shorts and flip-flops, or thongs as we call them in Australia, around a fire of some description, drinking cans of beer that they've bought themselves. They're putting huge steaks on the barbecue with sausages and buns and bread, and that's kind of it. There's none of this coleslaw, baked beans, all that sort of nonsense. It's just meat, bread, onions and ketchup. That's it. And beer. Yeah, they're just better. There's no palaver. It's just easy. And everyone has a good time.
No further questions, Commander.
Thanks, Trace. Really appreciate it.
Goodbye, Greg Keeley. For a limited time, we're inviting Americans of strong moral fiber to participate in our Slap 'em Up sticker campaign. For $5, we'll send you a pack of Ixnay's classic anti-Trump stickers, guaranteed to help you win friends and influence people. You see, around the country, people are stressed out by the current political climate, and we found that peeling the back from these stickers is a kind of self-care. And when followed by boldly or even clandestinely applying them in fun places, a lift of spirit is guaranteed. And that's what I think we all need, a recharge of spirit. America was founded by rabble-rousers protesting reactionary pressure. Think of applying these stickers as a tribute to that revolutionary fervor. So go to ixnaypack.org to order your stickers and slap them up, America. It's fun, it's provocative, it's pig Latin. To wrap things up, if you would kindly follow Ixnay Pack on the Twitter, on the Facebook, and on the Instagram, it would be a great service to the cause. Our cause, your cause, all of mankind's cause. So if you're out on your bike tonight, don't forget, the nature of your oppression is the aesthetic of our anger. Ixnay. Hello, me, me. Hello, me, me.